Thanks for tuning in to another cast from Tealtown, USA. In this episode, we're back with Drew Remenda to get his thoughts about the San Jose Sharks in the 2019 playoffs, including Game 7 versus Vegas, Game 7 versus Colorado, inconsistency in officiating, stories from 1994 when the Sharks last played back-to-back seven-game series, and more. Obviously, we didn't get the chance to talk to you after the first round. Just your thoughts on the first round. The Sharks clawing back from a 3-1 series deficit. Of course, the five-minute major on Eakin, which to me, I'm sorry, I think it should have been on Stastny. But anyway, and then Marchessault's comments afterwards, kind of just throwing it out there saying, well, refs stole this one from us. The refs didn't stop you from letting in 4 goals in 4 minutes. The refs didn't stop you from scoring in 18 minutes of overtime before Barkley Goodrow did. So just your thoughts on the first round versus the Golden Knights.
I thought in the first round that the biggest story of the first round was Martin Jones and, you know, getting yanked in games 2-4 and 5. And, sorry, what was it?
2-4.
Oh, it was 2-4? I thought I'd get 4-5. Anyway, getting yanked like he did. And not playing very well at all, and being the biggest question mark the Sharks had. Without a doubt, there was problems in goal. And then being able to flip the switch in game 6 and 7 and play as well as he did, it was a turnaround that I've not seen in all the years that I've been watching hockey and been in the NHL, that you see a guy that can turn it in a series. You know, the story that he stayed out the whole game 6 and took extra shots because he was trying to find his angles and trying to challenge himself to get better. And that was the biggest story of, to me, besides the 5-minute call and the ensuing 4 power play goals. That was the biggest story. It's Martin Jones being able to flip the switch and do what he did. You know, the big story is I thought that whole series that the Sharks were playing at a pace that they weren't very comfortable at. And when the pace quickened, when the pace got going, and it went up and down at your track meet, the Sharks didn't like it very much, but they hung in. What I thought about that series, what really showed me a lot in that series, was the resilience of the Sharks. And the other aspect was that they were a very determined group. Even though I thought that Vegas was quicker, really good in the attack, and when the pace picked up, the Sharks were hanging on. So I thought the Sharks showed themselves something in that one. But let's get to Game 7. Game 7 was, again, nothing I've ever seen like that in my life, is that fact that, okay, you're down 4-0. That happens. You think Stastny shouldn't have got anything. Stastny was just going through to his man and just happened to hit Joe because Joe was off balance. I said after that, and I wrote after that in the Mercury News, and Joe Pavelski, when he came out and spoke, agreed with me, that shouldn't even have been a penalty. And I don't say that to make people mad. It just shouldn't have. Joe agreed it shouldn't have been a penalty. But are you glad they called it? Damn right you are.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you look at that sequence, they are in perfect control, Vegas. They're winning this game and they're winning this series. That happens. And the goal, the first goal by Logan, 6 seconds in, that you could see the panic set in. And they had done a really good job of shutting down that power play pretty much for the series, especially in that game. And Logan scores 6 seconds in, and all of a sudden it's like, oh. And the goals that they scored on that power play, you could see that it was where the Sharks executed really well, because they were grade A point blank chances with guys in front of Marc-Andre Fleury, with the defense or the penalty killers for Vegas backing in and really causing some problems for Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, the second goal goes in a minute plus in, and all of a sudden Vegas says, uh-oh. And you could see them start to reel. To their credit, they come back to tie it. But I mean, as you said, 18 minutes, the Sharks were the better team in overtime. But the 4 goals in that power play, Kevin Constantine used to talk about, his former Sharks coach, used to talk about critical moments in games. And great teams rise at the critical moments, understand what the situation is in the critical moment, are able to excel and succeed, turn it on, step on the gas, whatever you want to say. And the Sharks did that. So, yeah, Jonathan Marchessault can say that the referee stole it. And you can question that call all you want. And the NHL obviously agree with Marchessault, the fact that the referees didn't make a very good call because they phoned and apologized. That happens. But your point is well taken and should be the underlying point, is the Sharks scored 4 power play goals on you. And I guarantee you, being a former coach, that night, as a coaching staff, you would have complained about their refs and, oh, how we get screwed and blah, 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 blah. And then the next day, maybe even on the plane on the way back, or the next day when you're having your coaches' meetings or watching the video again, I guarantee you every one of those coaches would have looked at each other and went, yeah, but we allowed 4 on the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
And the coaches, they would have surrendered to that. And that to me showed, from the Sharks' determination, you know, critical moment thinking, it showed that resilience we talked about. And it was one of the historically most improbable comebacks in not only Sharks history, but the NHL. It was incredible.
Oh, that was right up there with Baker in Game 7 versus Detroit back in the day. You know what I mean? Just explosive.
Yeah, but we were in charge of that. Like that game, in that game, we were in charge. Well, we played really well, a terrific first period. If Artur Zerbe didn't give the puck up, we shut them out in the first period after getting spanked 6-0 the game before. And that was a tight game. We were right in that game the whole time. You know, and Bake scores, makes it 3-2, and then we hung on. This game is, that team is done. They were down and out. It was third period, 4-0. It was over. They weren't coming back. Nobody gave them a chance to come back. And they're like, oh, well, Vegas is a pretty damn good team. But they were finished. And, well, at least we all thought they were.
Yeah.
But obviously they weren't. That's the amazing part. That's, honestly, that comeback is one that will be played and replayed on every, you know, top 10 comebacks of all time kind of thing in the NHL.
The thing that I think is lost in the entire Vegas series is, I mean, you can sit there, you can talk about the goal that was taken away and the penalty handed out in Game 2 when Couture got called for goalie interference. Again, there's everything that happened in Game 7, but I think something that gets lost in that entire series is the fact that when Marc-Edouard Vlasic was out, the Sharks lost those 3 games. You know, he goes out early in Game 2, the Sharks lose Games 2, 3, and 4. But Vlasic plays all of 1, all of 5, all of 6, all of 7. The Sharks win every one of those. Like, to me, that's, I don't know, Vlasic has just, for the season that he has had, which has not been one of Vlasic's best, he has really found another gear in shutting down the top guys on the other line, whether it's Stone, whether it's MacKinnon, whoever it is. Vlasic, to me, has been the unsung hero so far.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say, though, I would disagree that it's not lost on that coaching staff. It's not lost on those guys in that room. Mark is a very smart player. He's a guy who doesn't make very many mistakes. He's very efficient. He calms people down in the back end. He calms his entire team down in the defensive zone. So I think maybe, you know, to us just watching, maybe it's lost a little bit, but that team knows how valuable he is without a doubt.
We talk about the referees and the calls. I'm sure you watched Game 7 last night versus Colorado. What was your take on the Landeskog offside call? Where, I mean, it was a gutsy challenge by DeBoer, no doubt. And, you know, and it didn't stop the Avs from scoring one more goal in the final 32 minutes of the period. But what was your take on that call? You think they got it right? Or you think, you know what, we need to get less reviews out of the league rather than more?
Well, it depends on philosophically where you are on that. But let's say it was a gutsy call by Peter DeBoer, but also it was a really good, smart, heads-up call by Dan Darrow, who's their video coach. First of all, for Dan to know the rule, to have that eagle eye to watch that and say, oh, we got to take that shot. Because remember that if they get that wrong, it's a penalty. So the game's tied. If they get it wrong, the game's tied and you're shorthanded. It was an incredible swing. So Dan Darrow, number one, knowing the rule, like I said, and then making the call and going, yep, Pete, we got to call this. And the Peter DeBoer to have that much trust in his video coach, go, okay, let's make that call. So gutsy and smart by the coaching staff, without a doubt. As far as the play goes itself, I talked to an NHL general manager a couple of years ago when the Oilers got caught on a chintzy offside about 3 games in a row. They got challenged and got overturned. Or a guy's toe was up, or, you know, it was just one of those offsides where the rule was never intended to be that. It was never intended to take away that kind of offense. So I asked the coach, the general manager, about it, and he said, hey, a rule is a rule is a rule. So that's the way we looked at it. When we made this, call, yes, it was for the egregious offsides that, remember the Matt Duchesne one, Colorado.
Oh, of course.
And I said, you really didn't need to make a rule for that, though, because that was a one-off. That guy was, he was 10 feet outside. That's never going to happen again. He goes, yeah, but we decided to make a rule, and one thing we all agreed on, and we were told by the NHL officials that, I think it was Colin Campbell that he was quoting, he said, be careful what you wish for, guys. Because I guarantee you, every one of these ones, this rule, everybody in this room is going to regret it at one time or another in the game. You're going to hate the rule because it's going to come back to bite you. So be careful what you wish for. And if you look at that play, Landeskog's not even, and him being on the ice at that particular point and where he was in the rink had no impact on the goal being scored whatsoever. But he, though, to his credit, took full responsibility for it. He said it was a clumsy play on his part. And it was, he just wasn't aware. He just wasn't thinking at the time. So good on him and good leadership. He's not even in the play, as I said. But philosophically, if you believe that a rule is a rule is a rule, then they got it right. It's as simple as that. They reviewed it. They got it right. It was challenged. And to the rules, they got it. You can have that philosophical argument in the off season. Should we look at goals like this if the guy makes no impact, and you could go, yeah, you could have that discussion, but it doesn't matter right now because the rule is a rule is a rule, and they made the ruling and they made the review and they got it right. And as you said, gutsy call by Peter and Dan Darrow, good on him because he was really the unsung hero, and they should be buying that guy dinner when they hit the road in St. Louis.
Absolutely. And you want to talk about a rule is a rule is a rule. There's probably a team in Northern New York from 1999 who wants to talk about a rule is a rule is a rule.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what do you want? You know, so how do you want to play it? You know, Jack Ferrar, the very first general manager of the San Jose Sharks, I learned a lot from Jack. I got to be with him quite a bit upstairs in the press box, and times that we would be getting along, times we weren't. And I used to be one of those guys, and I still am one of those guys that gets after the referees and doesn't like a lot of the things that the situation room calls. And I know I'm not one of their favorite broadcasters, but I used to get mad all the time that Jack used to just turn and look to me. And one thing he said, and I still haven't learned the lesson, but I wish I would one of these days, is, Drew, they all even out in the end. Calls are going to go your way. Calls aren't going to go your way. But trust me, it all evens out in the end. When I was assistant coach with the Sharks, and the first time we made the playoffs in 93-94, Bob Airey was their captain. And Bob Airey scribbled down a bunch of things, 16 things he wrote down on a piece of paper one day, because he had won Stanley Cups before he got to San Jose. A lot of guys going to San Jose were veteran guys, but when the first time the Sharks had been in the playoffs. So he called a team meeting, and he scribbled down 16 things. 16 wins, or 16 thoughts about what it takes to win the Stanley Cup. You know, why 16? Well, it takes 16 wins to win. So one of those things is luck. One of those things was, and this goes back to the previous question about the first game, the first series, is that you're never out of a series. He wrote this down in a piece of paper. I'll never forget it. You're never out of a playoff game, and then he put in parentheses, five-minute major, just because you can come back on a five-minute major. And then he talked about even keel on the end. But one of those things was reffing. Never against you, never for you. Reffing. Even. So again, everything evens out. Sometimes calls are going to go your way. Sometimes calls aren't going to go your way. And the Sharks have had some calls go their way in the first two series and in game sevens. That's just the way the game is. You gotta roll with it when you get it.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because Jamie Baker posted that list on social media just a few days ago.
He posted on social media?
Yeah, the entire list, 1 through 16.
What is he doing, man? What is he doing? Jesus Christ, social media, I'm telling you. But why? That's something that should not be out there to the public. He did that?
Yeah, no.
Come
He put it out
there.
That's
ours.
Yeah, I know, you would think, right?
Jesus, Bakes. Bakes in social media, man. Holy crap.
Oh, he's embraced it.
I know. He loves that. He loves that freaking platform. He trusts me. You already know what my thoughts on social media from the last conversation we had.
Yeah.
I texted him after we get off. He really did.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I can't remember if it was Twitter or Instagram, but I remember.
whatever the quote was or whatever the list was that Bobby Erie talked about, refing how it all evens out. Don't worry about it. You know, don't get too high, don't get too low. But that's the one lesson from Bobby Erie. There's about many lessons, but refing sometimes goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. So roll with it, play through it, move your cause forward.
It's really funny you bring that up, because I was listening to, I'm a big fan of the NHL Network on Sirius, and I'm listening to Boomer the other day, or actually it was this morning, and he's talking about, the Sharks, they benefit from Game 7 call in the first round. Seems like they benefited from a call in the Game 7 of the second round, and sooner or later, that karma is going to come back at the Sharks. And I'm listening to that, and I'm going, oh, really? Like, let me provide you the list. This is karma coming back into the Sharks' favor, finally. the list of stuff that I have that went against the Sharks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, the whole thing is, so what? I mean, that's the one thing that you can't. I think as fans we can do it. I think as broadcasters we can do it. That's the one thing the players can't do. That's where it's important. The players and coaches don't get into it. Is that they just, hey, whatever. It's just one of the other challenges that you compete in or compete, try to play through in the National Hockey League or in the playoffs. It is something where if you start to get involved in that and thinking, well, we got the break there. We didn't get a break there. That gets you nowhere as a player. It gets you nowhere as a coach. It is what's next. Let's move on. That's what it's one of those on the list about Eric. Even keel. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. And you don't get too involved in what's being called. And you know what? Pundits and fans all over the place can complain about the call or whatever. The bottom line is the Sharks are moving on because they've been able to, at those critical moments, do the right thing at the right time. But as I said, the general managers, the call is the rule is the rule is the rule. So what if it's been going the Sharks' way? They've gone through series in their careers and the history of the Sharks where calls didn't go their way. That's just the way the game is. Sometimes in a game, calls go your way. Sometimes they don't. The good teams play through it. The good teams pass the adversity by. The bad teams think about, we didn't get that call, the referee screwed us. No. Those are teams that don't make playoffs, or those are the teams that get knocked out because they're worried about things they cannot control.
Yeah. I just looked it up while we're talking, and this is going to bake your noodle. Jamie Baker, he didn't post it on his own. He reposted somebody else who had posted it. And you know who that was?
Who posted it?
You might know this guy. His name is Randy Hahn.
Oh, my God. This case. Really?
Yeah.
Hahn did it?
May 25th, 2016. I just looked it up.
Oh, Christ, you did that long ago?
Yeah, it was during the Penguins, the run versus the Penguins.
Well, then I can't get mad. It was like that 70 years ago, but you know my thoughts on social media. It doesn't matter. Randy and I don't talk to each other anymore.
Yeah, that's okay.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, but really, Hahner did it, and then Jamie reached it.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
How did Hahner get it? He was a media guy, so kind of, how did he get it?
He probably took it out of your bag or something.
No, I never. I tried to commit it to memory. I was forced to eat the paper after I committed it to memory. I was like a spy. You know, you can't do that. As a coach, you don't give that stuff up. I didn't know Hahner was an investigative reporter. Good for him.
Yeah, right. Hey, what did you think about Erik Karlsson over this run? I mean, yeah, he had some, groin issues. He had some, but boy, he's had some. He looks like a pretty good offensive player. Defense, not so much over these first two rounds.
Go back and look at the goal that was disallowed yesterday. Go back and look at that goal. So the Banks bringing the puck up, he crosses the blue line. Erik Karlsson's, for some reason, right behind him and trips him. LeBanc loses the puck. Karlsson goes to try to get it in the neutral zone. Doesn't make much of an effort at it and gets chipped by him. Justin Braun's on the far side of the ice. I love Justin Braun. I think Justin Braun is one of the, you talk about unsung heroes, one of the best, most dependable guys in the world defensively. I love Justin. I think he's a terrific player. I think he's a wonderful human being, fantastic teammate. He's on the far side of the ice. As the puck gets chipped by, McKinnon's going for it. For some reason, Justin Braun thinks, I'm going to win that race. I'm going to beat Nathan McKinnon to the puck. No. No, you're not. But, hey, you know, good on you. So, you know what? The man's got no limitations. So he goes after him, has a terrible body position to prevent the pass, at least this and all but Ray Wilson, right? So they go all by himself, Vegas in the net. And you look at that play, and it all starts with Eric Carlson. What are you doing, man? Sometimes it's better just to back up a little bit, just to relax a little bit. I know this is, you know, this is a coach that lost 100 games quicker than in the history of the league on the coaching staff, and Eric Carlson, one of the great defensemen of our day. And I think Eric Carlson, as you said, is a great offensive defenseman. Defensively, he is challenged.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's like with Brent Burns, and this is what Peter DeBoer is so smart at. You take the good with the bad. It's as simple as that. Defensively, I think Eric Carlson is really going to be tested in this series against St. Louis. And so will all the Sharks defense. But Eric will be a lot because he's on the ice a lot. But you just decide to take the good with the bad. You know, Gerard Gallant from the Vegas Golden Knights is a hell of a coach. And one of the things that he was asked this year, I think it was earlier this year, maybe it was even last year, about what's been the secret to your success? And he goes, I don't hold my guys accountable. I don't challenge them on their mistakes. The game is full of mistakes. They're going to make them. And so I just let the guys figure it out. Peter DeBoer is, to me, the king of subtleties in coaching. He understands he's got a veteran group. He's got wonderful leaders, as guys, as he said, drive the bus for him. Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski, Brent Burns, Mark-Edward Vlasic, and Eric Carlson. But also, Peter, I'm not going to say he doesn't try to coach them, but he doesn't overanalyze them. The iPad is not out every time guys come back to the bench. And Steve Slott, Dave Barr the same way, and Rob Zeitler, and Jurgen Hedberg, they don't overcoach. And that's the new athlete nowadays. That's the new NHL player. Your job is to try to put them in the best position to succeed and make sure that you or they know you believe in them. You have to instill you have to fortify their belief system that you believe in them. Now, I've heard guys say you have to instill confidence. No, you don't instill confidence. Confidence comes from the player, comes from within. But the player has to be confident that he can go out and make a mistake and play the way that he plays in order to help the team win and not think about, oh, I can't make a mistake or the coach is going to yell at me when I come back to the bench. I think Peter DeBoer and his staff are masters at it. Absolute masters. I think Peter, I've talked to guys that have coached with Peter DeBoer, and they've called him a coach's coach. Direct, matter of fact, honest, but always calm. He exudes a calmness and a demeanor that lets the players play. So my long answer is, yeah, Carlson's got some deficiencies defensively. I think some of it's because he's been injured and he's had a leg injury that they're still trying to negotiate their way through the playoffs through. But you take the good with the bad with Eric Carlson, because the good far outweighs the bad when you add it all up.
Yeah, I think there's been a few times where this season he might have made a mistake, pinched too early, gotten caught too deep, and prior to his groin injury, he may have been able to outskate those mistakes. But since the groin injury, yeah, maybe the legs are just a hair slower this season, but hopefully that gets better.
And also, he played a lot of minutes, man. I mean, the legs are heavy right now. You know, rest is a weapon for anybody going in this deep into the playoffs. But yeah, there's without a doubt, he didn't have in the start of the playoffs, he didn't have the same mobility of turning or making plays or things like that. But he is now, when I watch him skate forward, he's fine. But watching him turn and try to handle guys one-on-one, and he's still got a little trouble there, but he's a heck of a lot smoother than he was in the first series. So I think he's feeling better, but the accumulation of minutes and that injury still are adding up. So I'm sure that Ray Tufts is doing major league work on trying to keep this guy on the ice.
And, of course, you mentioned the Blues. We know that the Sharks are going to be basically a repeat of the 2016 Western Conference Final, and it's odd that on January 2nd, we're talking about a St. Louis squad that were dead last, 11 points out of the playoffs. They replaced their coach. Bennington steals the crease, and they've just been on a historical run ever since. Have you ever seen any, you know, anything like this aside No. from, you know, the 94 Sharks coming back from their previous season?
Yeah. The, that was a lot of pushing to get it up the hill, I'll tell you that. But this is a team where, when you look at them in the preseason, the start of the season, this is a team that you should have been in this situation. Should have been a team that was going to be in the playoffs and going to be one of the teams that challenged for the Central and was a really good team, because they are. When you look at their makeup, they're an excellent team. But they didn't get goaltending at the start. Mike Yeo was not connecting with the players, where the point where even Mike Yeo said, yeah, I think I should probably be fired for what I've done so far. It was a better team. There was rumors about guys being traded. Craig Berube came in and changed some lines and kept changing lines. But then once he found his combination, with a lot of help, our friend Larry Robinson came down on the bench because he's working for the St. Louis Blues now. And Steve Ott, the old pest, he's on the bench. They settled things down. Some lines got back together, like Tarasenko and Schwartz and Shin. They found that third line with Tyler Bozak and Pat Maroon and Robert Thomas, who's a heck of a player. Ryan O'Reilly is one of the best centermen in the league. They've got a solid lineup. Plus, their defense are gigantic. Average 6'3", 215 pounds. They've got Colton Preko, 6'6", who shoots the puck like it's shot out of a cannon. Petrangelo is fantastic. I mean, they're a really, really good hockey team. And this is going to be, as it should be, as the playoffs continue to get deeper and deeper in the playoffs, and the playoffs, it gets harder and harder. This is going to be the toughest series. It's going to be heavy because, one, as I talked about, the big defense. And they occupy a lot of important areas over the ice, and they really test you in being able to enter the zone properly. They're heavy pressure, and they're heavy physically. So that's going to be a tough for the smaller Sharks forwards. The other aspect is they are a very good forecheck and cycle team. So the Sharks have to spend some time in their zone and get comfortable spending time in their zone. But they also, the Blues, go to the front of the net very, very well. And you look at many of the goals that they scored in these last two series, it's been from Blood and Portland just in front of the blue paint. This is going to be a physically demanding series on both teams. And make no mistake about it, St. Louis is for real. They will drive teams crazy. I think so far in the playoffs, they have been the best team at occupying offensive zone time and wearing the other team out. So getting a hold of the puck and trying to exit the zone as quickly as you can is going to be ultra important. But this is going to be a very, very hard series after two really hard series before.
Oh, two game sevens, and you got to give stick taps to Bishop and Dallas. I mean, that guy just, oh my Lord. It was an amazing game seven. And like you said, this comeback from the beginning of the season is just, it's one that's just amazing. And like you said, I remember talking to guys when we were doing Pacific Division preview at the beginning of the season. It was kind of like, okay, so everybody's of the same mind that Winnipeg and Nashville are going to battle for the top of the Central and St. Louis is going to slot into the third spot.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve, we're like, what? You know, we couldn't believe what had happened. So, yeah, I look forward to this series. I think it's going to be great. You know, you talk about players like Maroon. I mean, only two goals the last series, but both of them game winners. Yeah. So,
Patty Maroon was in Edmonton. He played the Sharks in that series when the Oilers and the Sharks tagged up a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Patty's a good dude, man. He is one of those guys that he is a good dude. He's a big fan of Joe Thornton's. Loves Jumbo. Thinks Jumbo's a great player. He's right. He is a guy that plays on a lot of emotion. He's heavy to play against. He was being healthy scratched by Mike Gill and a couple times with Craig Berube too. And then he found his way. He's not fleet of foot, but he is a guy who is able somehow to get there and get to the right spot. And you talk about being tough in front of the net. He is. He's a wonderful guy. It was such a great thing to have him score double overtime in his hometown. His son Anthony there, we saw it. It's great. He's one of those good ones. He reminds me a lot, as a matter of fact, of Jumbo. He's got that big personality like Joe does.
See, okay, tell me this after the series is over. You know, I want to hate these guys right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But you'll end up hating them.
Yeah.
You'll watch the way they play the first game. Yeah, you'll end up hating them. Without a doubt. That's good.
Speaking about guys to hate, your thoughts on Brad Marchand? A guy who licks people, he sucker punches guys, and then when he's asked question by the media afterwards, he uses 39 words to answer 19 questions, and unbelievable.
For me, you know, I don't get too bent out of shape with Brad Marchand, but I will say this, is that I heard people defending him on local radio shows here in Saskatoon and national shows in Canada and Boston Bruins fans. Well, he doesn't get paid to give interviews. Well, you know what? Yeah, he does. And I'll tell you why. Because the players get 50% of the revenue generated by the National Hockey League. All revenue generated, game revenue, all generated by the National Hockey League. The players get 50%. 50% of TV broadcast rights. The company that I work for, Rogers Sportsnet, they paid $5.3 or $5.2 billion for the rights to the National Hockey League. And it was our guy, Kyle DeCosseff, who was interviewing me. And those two-word answers or one-word answers were, I don't know how to describe it, besides belligerent and immature, they lacked professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
But he also lacked responsibility. And the responsibility is that, hey, dude, guess what? You are getting paid by us to do this. Yeah, you get paid to play hockey without a doubt. But the $5.2 billion, a chunk of that went to Jeremy Jacobs, and a chunk of what Jeremy Jacobs got went to you. So, yeah, you know, technically, if you want to break it down, you are paid to do interviews. But I think overall, it just lacked professionalism and made the league look bad. And I think that Mr. Bettman should have been able to find that Marchand for conduct detrimental to the game. But overall, I don't hate Brad Marchand. I just think he's just immature and sometimes a little goofy.
I mean, you see him stomping on guys' sticks and the sucker punches, you just go, God, you're not the guy that needs to be the face of the league, is what I'm saying.
Yep. Well, but he's a hell of a player. I mean, the bottom line is he is a hell of a hockey player. He has got great skill, skates well, passes well. He's a big part of the Boston Bruins' success. And I don't take that away from him, because that, without a doubt, is his enduring quality to the Boston Bruins and Boston Bruins fans, and he helps you win. He's one of those guys, and maybe the cover boy for, God, I hate him, but I'd love to have him on my team. Because he is that good. So he is, but that little act, I look at it and I'm, oh, well. And that's, it's Brad being Brad, but at the same time, it's not professional. Like, and then right after that, on Sportsnet here in Canada, they interviewed David Backus. And you want to talk about a class guy. Holy mackerel. David Backus scored a big goal in that game. He got a big smile on his face. He said, he's, you know, in the twilight of his career, like Joe Thornton, he's been close. He's a bully on the ice. He's a hard guy to play against. He's mean, but one of the most gracious, uplifting interviews you're ever going to hear. And he was really good right after Brad Marchand. So, like a refereeing with players, it all evens out in the end.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, you know, heat of the moment, post-game stuff. Landeskog after Game 7, I thought, just... You talk about that offside call, whatever, and Landeskog was just like a quintessential pro in answering the questions. It was just, it was like a school was in session on how to answer after a big game.
For a young guy.
Yeah. Finally, the one thing I definitely wanted to get your take on, and that's only because this has been driving me absolutely crazy. So, the Bruins, you know, McAvoy gets a penalty. Yeah. And a one-game suspension after Department of Player Safety takes a look at his headshot on Columbus's Josh Anderson. Yet, Braden McNabb had almost an identical hit on Justin Braun in Game 3 versus the Golden Knights. Not only was it not a penalty, McNabb did not even hear from Player Safety, despite having a history of some, shall we say, dirty shenanigans. And just, what do you think this the NHL, whether it's Department of Player Safety, Paros, somebody needs to bring down the dartboard. I mean, how do you find consistency when you see, and remember, in that same game when McNabb drilled Justin Braun, later in that game, Thornton goes off for a headshot on Thomas Nosek, gets a game suspension. Now, was Thornton's more egregious? Absolutely. But to see Thornton get a suspension for that, well, meanwhile, in the same game, McNabb spins Braun's head around and not even a penalty.
A few things. First of all, Braden's from Saskatoon. I know him really well, so legally I can't criticize him. I actually love the guy. One of them, just a terrific guy. Joe Thornton's was a suspension. He should have known better. He shouldn't have done it.
Yep.
And that was a frustrated Joe Thornton in that situation. As far as Braden's goes on Justin Braun, I'm probably along the Department of Player Safety. I didn't think it was as bad as you thought it was, or as some of the Sharks fans thought it was. But again, I looked at what the Department of Player Safety was doing, and I didn't get it. I don't understand it, and I honestly made a conscious decision that I'm not going to question the way they're doing things. The one problem I have with the Department of Player Safety is their explanation of such rulings and not rulings. So when they make a call or don't make a call on a suspension, I think they need to do a better job of explaining it to us. We may not agree with it, but it'd be nice if we got that out there, if they got that out there as much as they could. And I guess on non-suspensions, they wouldn't. But if it was close, they could, and somebody could ask them a question, maybe they could issue some sort of statement. But again, when you start wondering, you know, why not now and why this, why that, it goes back to the reffing thing. It goes back to that's just the way the game is. Sometimes the calls go your way. Sometimes they don't. If I'm going to waste my time looking and wondering what George Parros and Ray Whitney and that crew are doing in Toronto, then you're really wasting your energy and your passion, because you're not going to get the answer you want. You're not going to get the explanation you want. There's no grand conspiracy against any team. There's no bias. It's not some guy, well, I played with this guy, so I'm not going to do it. It's just the way it is. I learned my lesson a long time ago, and it was Brendan Shanahan was in charge of player safety. Remember when Brad Stewart hit Rick Nash? This was years ago. Brad Stewart hit Rick Nash, and Rick Nash got hurt. The hit was clean, but Rick Nash's head popped off the glass in San Jose. Brad Stewart got a bunch of games. And my producer, Sean Madison, the next game, when the ruling came down, he put me on camera in Vancouver and said, tell me what you think of this trade, or this suspension. And I went off in an embarrassingly bad way. And I called Ben Shanahan out, and I said such stupid things. And Ben Shanahan heard it, you know. And he was right to be upset with me. And the NHL was right to be upset with me. And the NHL Department of Player Safety was right to be upset with me, because I was asinine in what I was saying. Because I was emotional on it. Brad Stewart, I'm a huge fan of Brad Stewart, and I thought the hit was a hard hit, and the damage done was the knock off the glass, not on the head. But it doesn't matter what I think, and for me to go after and attack the integrity of the National Hockey League player, Department of Player Safety, was wrong. And Brendan Shanahan was right to be wrong, was mad at me. So it was almost right after then I decided, I'm not going to do that anymore. Now, there's some situation room stuff that I question, interference and stuff like that. That's my job as a broadcaster. That part, that goes. I think we all get to a point where we get heated and we get passionate and we get mad and we say things in the moment that emotion rules your brain. But overall, if you're looking at any kind of, the only consistency we're going to find is inconsistency, because it really depends on our perspective and how we view whatever play based on whatever team we cheer for, whatever team we're broadcasting for, whatever the situation may be. I think we all come at it from different angles. And so I think you just let it roll. Sometimes, as I said, calls are going to go your way. Sometimes they're not. On that one, I didn't think it was as bad as you thought it was. I think it was hard, but I thought they kind of got that one right, to tell you the truth.
Well, it's that idea of, you know, the Department of Player Safety, as in life. Some days you're the windshield, some days you're the bug.
Some days you're the bug.
Yeah.
Yep. Some days you're the leader of the slugger, sometimes you're the ball, man.
Right. So the last time that the Sharks went to consecutive seven-game series, you might have been behind the bench. Any stories you want to share from 25 years ago on whether it was Detroit or Toronto? It was Calgary or Toronto?
Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto. I was thinking of the following.
And then the next year we went to Calgary, too. We went seven games, double overtime. I'll tell you I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it anyway. We lose in Detroit. It was a 2-3-2 series. We're up 3-2 going to Detroit, and we lose 6-0 in game six, and we are bad. We are horrible. And Kevin Constantine and I, we did the video, and it was always in the playoffs, even keel, don't change, keep it routine, because that's what players love. And you don't get too high, don't get too low. So the next day, I'm waiting for Kevin. We always watch early in the morning, but he wasn't around. But 8 o'clock at night, maybe even a little bit earlier, he phones me in the hotel. No cell phones back then. He phones me and goes, okay, you want to watch video? I said, where the hell have you been? He goes, I went to the ball game. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, I went to the Tigers game. It was a beautiful day, and you know, it's April in Detroit. And I went, are you freaking kidding me? And he goes, come on, let's go. So we watch. And we would log everything, and Kevin had a computer system that we would log everything in there. And as we're logging stuff, it's really negative stuff that he's logging. And I said to him, what are you doing, man? Why are you logging all the negative stuff? Because you don't do that in the playoffs. You keep it positive. So Kevin said, at the end, Kevin got madder and madder watching video. And at the end, he goes, 8:30 tomorrow morning, put the word out, get a room downstairs. We're going to watch video before we go. Morris Case said, no, we're not. Kevin, we're not doing this. And he goes, yeah, we're doing it. Get it freaking done. I said, Kevin, just calm down. He goes, get it done. Like, okay. Next morning, 8:30, but before we go to the morning's game, we have a team down at the hotel, and Kevin shows the video. And it is negative. It is bad how bad they played. And they were terrible. And he goes after the Russians. He goes after Mac, and he goes after Igor. Goes after Garpy and Ozzy, Stan Solzhenitsyn, and Jeff Norman, the most, goes after them. We do a morning skate, I think it was Power Play, we showed them Power Play, and they were bad too. It was more negative video, and it was a horrible morning skate to the point where Igor Larionov left the ice early. We came back to the hotel, and when we went in for the team lunch, most of the players got up and left. They were so pissed off at us. So I phoned my wife, Michelle, and I said, she was very thankful. I said, oh, we're done. We're done. This is, Kevin's blown it. It's the worst. I can't believe you would do this. It's just terrible. I'm thinking we got no chance. Get to the rink. Kevin says to me, I need you to get 20 pucks, and I need you to get 20 Sharpies and put in everybody's stall. I said, okay. So they come in, the pucks are on their stalls, so are the Sharpies. Kevin gives, and this is very rare because this doesn't really happen in the NHL. Kevin gives what I consider the best pregame. Well, it is the best pregame speech I've ever heard in my life. And he starts off with, in September, I told you we were going to shock the world. I told you we weren't here to make friends. I told you we weren't going to be the Sad Sack Sharks. I told you we are going to change everything about this organization and this team. And I told you, we are going to shock the world. And tonight, when we win this game, and he kept using when we win this game through his speech, when we win. And the very end, the gist of it was, when we win this game and we're out there celebrating, there's somebody that's going to be as happy for you as you are for yourself and each other and your teammates, because that person helped you along the way. That person was instrumental in helping you get here. That person is your biggest fan right now. And when you shock the world, when we shock the world, they're going to be the happiest for you. So I want you to take a Sharpie and I want you to sign that puck to them right now. And when he said that, like, I'm standing at the back and I can see everybody. When he said that, it was like, because it was honestly, for me, goosebumps. You know, chills. wow. If I had any hair, I would have been standing up at that time. It was such a powerful speech, and the way he delivered it was amazing. And we went out and played what I consider the perfect first period. If Urbe doesn't give away that puck on the power play, the Sharks, and I can't remember who scored for them, but if Urbe doesn't give it away, we come out of that first period gangbusters. But we played pretty much a perfect first period. We win the game. Everything's great. And we're waiting for the winner of Calgary-Vancouver. If Calgary wins, we're going to Calgary. If Vancouver wins, we're going to Toronto. So we're sitting on the plane waiting. And some of the guys are in watching it at the FBO. And then I'm on the plane, and Igor Larionov catches my eye, and he motions me to come back and see him. And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay. He says, this is my best Russian. He goes, you fucking tell that guy. He said, it's not going to work again. okay. I said, okay. So that line, they played. They were amazing that game. So I walked up to Kevin. I go, Kev, in the VI, I said, Igor's got a message. And he goes, what is it? And I said, it's not going to fucking work again. and Kevin smiles and goes, you go tell him I only needed it to work once.
That's right.
That's the best game seven. So if you have one in game seven with Calgary, but that is my favorite game seven story. You know what that shows, though? It shows, one, Kevin Constantine was a terrific leader. Terrific leader. He was bold. He was set in his ways, but he was bold. He took a chance, and he believed in his core was right. So he coached from the gut that game. And he made a bold move and then followed up with really a lot of inspiration and belief. The other thing it tells you is that those players were hardcore. They were resilient. They could take a punch in the nose. They could take their coach being pissed off at them and still focus on the right thing. They didn't sulk. They weren't babies about it. They went, okay. And a little bit of, you know what, screw you. If you're gonna come at me like that, watch this, and we'll show you kind of thing. That team was, when I talk resilient, that team was hardcore, hard nose. We will stick it up your rear end, because that team was a bunch of throwaways, a bunch of cast-offs, guys that other teams had let them go. And they were going to show the coaches. They were going to show each other. They were going to show the hockey world that, hey, we belong here. And that's what they did. So that was, to me, it showed Kevin with really gutsy leadership, and it showed that team as a team that was, as I said, hard as steel and in willpower and attitude.
I got to tell you, just hearing it is starting to give me, like, kind of, you know, goosebumps, a little memories, because, boy, that 93-94 season, I mean, that's what had me in love with the Sharks. And I just remember that spring, April, you couldn't take five steps anywhere within 2 miles of the Shark Tank and not just see person after person, everybody decked out in teal. It was a magical time. But 25 years later, after, you know, and obviously it's, you know, a couple of years when you factor in the Cow Palace, but I'm saying 25 years from the opening of the Shark Tank, that's awesome. I'm so happy you shared that. That was fantastic. Look, I thought we were only going to do like 10, 15 minutes, but hey, both of us can spin a yarn. So thank you so much for your time. And hopefully once this is all said and done, we'll be able to hook up again and talk about where you're going to be sitting here for the parade somewhere on Santa Clara Street.
I'm going to be watching it on TV, and be the happiest guy in the world when Joe Thornton raises that cup above his head.
Right? That's all I'm saying. Well, it's so great to talk to you, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Jay. Talk to you later. Bye.